Welcome to episode 234 of The Low Blow. I am Justin Goodrum, joined by Jorge Hernandez. What's up, man?
Pretty good. How are you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. Welcome back. Yeah, you took a little bit of a trip to El Paso. How was that?
It was nice, man. I mean, it's not that long of a drive from Albuquerque. What, maybe 3 hours, give or take a little bit more. And, enjoy what was 11 hours worth of boxing.
For sure. So we'll discuss your trip in just a second. We'll also recap Holly Holm in action. We'll discuss a little bit about some of the legacy card that took place over the weekend. We'll just break down this upcoming weekend's UFC on Fox card, along with some other pressing MMA stories, such as the Real Sports domestic violence piece that aired on Real Sports on HBO. And we'll discuss this whole Jacob Stitch Duran Reebok story that's really evolved into a PR nightmare for not only the UFC, but also Reebok. But first, you can always get in touch with the show through social media. We're available through Twitter, through @TheLowBlow, also through Facebook by typing in Low Blow Podcast. And also, we're available always on Stitcher, Spreaker, and on iTunes and on Podomatic. So, man, let's get into it right now. You're not just in El Paso for pleasure. You're also there to cover some boxing, like you said. Two boxing cards that aired on national TV, one on CBS and the other on Showtime. I guess, you know, so much boxing that took place, but your overall impressions of Chris Areola fought on that card. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. also fought. Just your overall impressions of what you saw, and also if you can kind of give your kind of impressions of kind of the Premier Boxing Champions and then Showtime Boxing, any differences, any similarities?
Well, as far as the overall presentation, it was pretty similar. They didn't have that PBC stage that we're typically used to seeing set up there in El Paso, you know, the huge kind of, you know, wrestling model kind of a ramp that they have for sure. Some of their other bigger shows. So that was interesting to see that wasn't there. Maybe just the configuration of the Don Haskins Center, I don't think allowed it. And surprisingly, I think it didn't allow it because there was a big crowd on hand. So that was pretty interesting to kind of think of it that way, that, hey, they probably expect a lot of people, so they might not have room for the ramp and stuff. And for the most part, that venue, by the time Chavez fought that evening, I'd say maybe when Carl Frampton fought during the PBC on CBS show during the day, it was maybe 20% full, if even that, to be honest, man. Like, there was not that big of a crowd for the early showing. And, you know, and you'd think so. It's early in the afternoon. People are still getting their day starting. I think here in El Paso, or here in the Mountain Time Zone, I think the card started at 11:30 a.m., and, you know, of course, Carl Frampton didn't end up fighting until, I believe, 2:30. So the crowd was still developing. Ultimately, when Chavez Jr. fought, there were over 9,000 people there. So pretty good crowd. You know, a lot of people think, oh, those 9,000, that's not that much because, you know, NBA does, what, 16,000 plus. Well, again, they're going to see one person. They're not going to see 10 people on a stage at the same time. So that's where you have the differences. But you brought up what I thought about the two guys, Areola. I'm going to focus on Areola and Chavez Jr. here for my first kind of bit.
Sure.
To me, they're not like almost the same person. And I mean, I guess I want to kind of speak to that a little bit more. It's like these guys, for whatever reason, they lack that extra motivation and they have the skills. They have the tool sets to be dominant or one of the top fighters in their respective divisions. But the laziness that two of these guys tend to show, and I don't want to say laziness, I mean, that's not right for me to kind of just straight up call it, but the fact that you feel there's something missing from their effort, it's a little disappointing because of, one, where their position, they're still making some pretty damn good money, but to think that these guys could easily be world champions if they truly applied themselves just kind of drives me crazy sometimes.
Yeah. To me, Chris Areola, it seemed like he lost some weight. He looked good to me.
Yeah.
In terms of his appearance.
Yeah. Now I was referring to some of the movement he has. He was eating a lot of easy shots up the middle that, you know, you'd hope a fighter of his pedigree would be able to avoid or not get caught in traps of a guy that's not better than him or to his level. And I mean, let's not forget Chris Areola didn't win that fight. He had a majority draw against Fred Cassie, a guy who, you know, we got to respect him. He came to bang too, but I mean, if you think about it, Cassie was coming off a loss, a KO loss, and he was set up for Chris Arreola to win. Jay, I'm trying to think of it. I still don't think a Hispanic fighter has won on PBC against a non-Hispanic opponent.
Wow.
I'm trying to think. I mean, Abner Modest won, but Leo Santa Cruz won, but they fought, I believe, fellow Mexicans. So it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, for sure. Quickly, talk about, I mean, we discussed this on Combat Sports Weekly, but your thoughts on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., another guy not living up to his potential, just pretty much relying on kind of God-given ability, from the family tree of, legendary fighters, but seems like he doesn't have that passion like you were saying.
Right, it's just, and you kind of see it in the way he complains to the referee, almost like it's owed to him. You know, hey, the guy hit me a low blow. Let me complain, yell out and scream, and to where it ruins the rhythm of the fight until you actually do something about it. It was unbelievable. One of the low blows, and rightfully so, a couple of them were low. But, I mean, Chavez got to act more professional than screaming out like, someone's crying out bloody murder almost at times. But one of them was pretty low. Chavez kept complaining, took a couple of seconds in the corner, continued to complain. And then the referee, which what seemed after about a minute, decided to take a point away from Marco Reyes. It was just unbelievable that he was able to bait the referee into taking that point. And I'm not saying that the point did not deserve to be taken, but Chavez Jr. just like it almost felt like mentally he was looking for an excuse to get an edge in that fight. It was just unbelievable.
So moving on, since we have tons of topics to discuss, I'm going to kind of want to fast forward through these topics here. Quickly before we get into Holly Holm, Frank Mir was in action against Todd Duffy. This was pretty much all those fights were recorded before we were able to give our thoughts on them. So quickly, your thoughts on that fight with Todd Duffy, pretty much a firefight between two guys that pretty much stood in the pocket and decided to see who would go down first.
And a lot of people are surprised that he was able, Frank Mir, that is, was able to pull this off. And
sure.
Frank Mir's just one of those guys that won't go away. It was just about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, that this guy had lost four fights in a row. And here he is beating Antonio Silva, beating Todd Duffy, and guess the both outcomes of him, KO.
Yeah.
So this guy's able to continue to keep just dropping KOs. It's going to be unbelievable. Justin, out of his 18 wins, out of his 18 wins in his career, obviously his last two I just told you have been by knockout. How many more knockout wins out of the other 16 do you think Frank Mir has?
Well, he has the most submissions. He's up there as most submissions in the UFC.
Right.
So you're asking how many KOs does he have total?
Total, yes.
I would go four.
It's five. You're pretty damn
five,
close.
Five, okay.
So, Jay, you mentioned him highing a submission game. That's what I'm trying to get at. If he's able to open his repertoire and just how he's able to finish guys, he might make another run. I mean, if he just keeps winning by KOs or submissions and not having these fights go to a decision, that benefits him. Just because he's older, we don't know how well he's going to, his cardio is. So if he's able to end the fight before the second round the way he's doing now, I'm telling you, Jay, there's a potential that he might fight for a title or fight for the number one contendership again.
Yeah, I agree. And I've always said, it's the one division that you want to fight in because you pretty much have to lose five fights in a row to be cut. I mean, even with Todd Duffy, it might be a bad loss, in the short term. But in the long term, it's going to take, I would say, five losses for you to get cut. Where in other divisions, two losses, you could be gone. So in the heavyweight division, no one's out of it. Even Fedor, there's rumors of him returning. He wins a couple of fights, he could be in line for the UFC title. If he looks good, the UFC belt's not out of the realm of possibility for Fedor or for any fighter, for that matter, in that top 15. So let's get to Holly Holm. She got a lot of backlash for her victory over in UFC Fight Night. Very conservative. And to me, I'm not really surprised. I don't think you're surprised either. On my Facebook and Twitter timeline, there's a lot of people saying she's boring, no desire to see her fight. And I think that's kind of, in a way, good for Holly Holm. There's no expectations for her. But I guess my question is, Jorge, we didn't really see too much of her ground game, right? We saw her pass guard once. We saw her kind of use her physical strength, but not really show, I would say technique, you know, I would say compared to, you know, Conor McGregor, right? We saw Conor McGregor on his back. We saw him have to overcome adversity on the ground, good or bad. With Holly, we haven't really seen that yet. So I guess my question is it time for Holly to finally fight somebody within that 7-5 range? You know, Jessica Eye, Misha Tate, loser, certainly Liz Carmouche, Sarah McMahon, somebody in that repertoire. Do you think she's still a couple of fights away from getting a lucrative opportunity?
No, I think this is the time for her to fight one of the top, you know, dare I say top five. It needs to get up there just if they hope Holly Holm fights for a world title, because you're going to put her against some of these girls who are more diverse, probably a better ground game. So I think within the next three fights, Holly Holm, if she stays undefeated, will fight for the world title. And it just depends on the matchup. I mean, I don't know how much the UFC is really leaning to cater to her, especially because of this negative backlash that he's had. And I don't really understand why, because the fight that we saw her in against Marion Monroe or Renault, the same stuff that we saw throughout her boxing career.
Well, by the same time, Jorge, you know, we're fans of hers, right?
Right.
I mean, you have a lot of MMA outsiders. That how many MMA insiders really saw her fight, MMA or boxing? I mean, her fights before the UFC were mainly on Access TV. And before then, I mean, no one really saw her boxing career. It's really just a legend at this point, right? I mean,
I completely agree.
Yeah.
No,
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say that, you know, and obviously they're judging her off recent history in the the sport they're currently seeing her in. So she has been dominating before she came to the UFC. But, I mean, come on. Was she fighting world-class fighters before here in the UFC? I mean, some of those girls were, you know, average fighters, you know, maybe slightly above average, but they weren't anywhere near the level her last two opponents have been. Even Pennington. Like, a lot of the girls that Holly had fought before her weren't at that level, so that was a huge step up, even though, to me, Pennington's an average fighter. And then, you know, Marion Renault, who has okay stand-up and decent ground game, Holm was able to nullify both. So I thought she did a good job, and I gave her a B in that fight. And so I don't know where these Ds and Fs are coming from, these people, but you mentioned the possible fight between Jessica Eye and Tate. I think that's it. I think the Misha Tate Jessica Eye loser will get that fight against Holly Holm.
Yeah, and I think Holly, I mean, you saw with her opponent, with Renault, I mean, she was intimidated by Holly Holm's striking. And I think that's something a lot of women in that division, it's not necessarily a power thing, but it's just her footwork, the way she moves in there, she has the best striking in that division easily. And I think the question is for Holly when she fights for the title, is she going to be conservative, or is the game plan going to go out the window? Because for some reason, the majority of the women, for the exception of really Sarah McMahon, they have all pretty much followed Ronda Rousey to the ground, and I don't understand why. I don't know if it's a pride thing. I'm not really sure what's happening. But I just think with Holly, she's so conservative, maybe that's kind of the recipe to beat Holly Holm. To beat Ronda Rousey, because Holly's so conservative, she's going to use her footwork, she's not going to engage in a firefight or go to the ground. That's what I hope what happens there. Moving on, I do want to address this rumor of Carlos Condit possibly fighting for the title against Robbie Lawler. Again, this is a rumor reported by Jeremy Blotter, a MMA reporter. This has not been confirmed by any major MMA website or the UFC. So for what we've heard, for upcoming UFC cards, it's going to be Robbie Lawler, Carlos Condit, Tyron Woodley against Johnny Hendricks. Again, this has not been confirmed by the UFC. If this doesn't that go down, Jorge, what are your overall thoughts of, obviously, Johnny Hendricks getting robbed, I think, in some people's eyes, of the title shotting? I guess your early thoughts on the bat.
I don't know if they wanted to make that third fight. You and I had talked about it before. Hendricks and Lawler, of course, we know what they've had, and they don't want to, dare I say, I guess, dry out the well there with that division at the top by having the two, I would say maybe they're the two best fighters, right? Would you agree, Lawler and Hendricks right now, based off, off their current history? To kind of drain that out. So if you can do a, or dry that out, I should say, if you do the Johnny Hendricks versus Tyron Woodley, you have a that's a pretty damn good fight. Yeah. And then you have Condit versus Robbie Lawler. I mentioned the, I guess, what you would call the tournament model where the top seed plays the lowest seed, and then the two middle seeds obviously have to play each other to kind of advance. And this is what this kind of seems like, and why they're giving it to Condit. Obviously, Rory McDonald, medical suspension for a while, and who knows, you know, how or if ever he'll be able to recover from that war that he had with Lawler. But Condit was, you know, the next reasonable pick, I think, after Johnny Hendricks. Woodley, of course, you know, he would like to fight for the title, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's coming, his last fight was it a loss, or did he have another fight after that? For some strange reason, I'm blocking on Woodley's last three fights and in what order they actually took place, but
let me check.
Yeah, but nonetheless, you know, it's a good position for Carlos Condit to be in, and I don't see a whole lot of people complaining about it. I know they wanted to see the blogosphere is what I mean, and Twitter, wanted to see a Matt Brown against Carlos Condit, but obviously, you know, that's not happening.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because he's won two in a row.
Oh, he has? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I remember, because you're right to think that he lost, because he was involved in one of the terrible fights of the year against Calvin Gastelum.
Right,
you remember,
and that was a while back.
Yeah, it was a catchweight at 180 pounds. So, that bout sucked. So, I mean, it could have gone either way. I count that as kind of a loss for Tywin Willie anyway, so no wonder you thought he lost. But he did defeat Dun Young Kim, destroyed him.
Right.
That was in China. So technically he's won three out of his last four. I mean, the Carlos Condit fight, Condit got hurt, and then the Gastelum fight was terrible. He lost to Rory McDonald pretty convincingly. I guess it makes sense for him to, you know, fight a contender like Johnny Hendricks in order to get that title shot. If you don't mind, I want to talk real quickly. The UFC has been under some scrutiny this week. Two stories. One dealing with, first, the domestic violence story on Real Sports about domestic violence within MMA. I saw the story from start to finish. We could go spend an hour on this, but just my quick thoughts. Obviously, it's easy, you know, to take offense of any kind of a story, right? We cover this story all the time, both in mixed martial arts and boxing. So when an outsider and HBO Real Sports, you know, takes notice of, you know, mixed martial arts in a particular problem, it's really easy to get defensive. But, you know, looking at the story objectively, I think they've pointed out really some good points. My only problem with the story is that they didn't have somebody's perspective, like an MMA reporter's perspective, and it's not to defend the sport of mixed martial arts, it's to give some context as to what's happening within Bellator and within the UFC. And really, I think if you would have a MMA journalist like Lou Thomas, Ariel Helwani, Josh Gross, somebody, I think you would further, I think, damage, you know, the reputation of both UFC and Bellator, which I'm fine with. I just would like to see more of a journalistic perspective rather than interviewing, you know, Mayhem Miller, who's known to be nuts, and now it's just crazy to see him being interviewed. So that was my one beef. My other beef was the MMA stats in particular, because they compared the domestic violence issues within mixed martial arts compared to other leagues, such as Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA. Now, MMA is not a league, it's a sport, right? So when you're comparing the domestic violence numbers of mixed martial arts, that's all over the world. So you're talking anybody who's had a fight. So, you know, you can declare anybody having a fight, you know, on some podong MMA card compared to the UFC, the NFL, which is a smaller sample size. So that was pretty sensationalistic. Now, is there a problem within domestic violence within the MMA community? Absolutely. Is there a problem within punishing these guys? Yes, absolutely. And I think UFC and Bellator need to be held responsible for that. Obviously, it can go in a long time, but just your thoughts on the story. Obviously, did not receive the same kind of press compared to, you know, Ray Rice and other incidents like that.
Ryan, it's definitely something, you know, I want to watch. We were discussing that earlier this afternoon, and
sure,
you know, how this could potentially be a little more sensationalized than what it was. And the pool that you're taking this from is enormous. You know, it's like you said, it's not, MMA is not a league, it's an entire sport. So it's not like you're taking all basketball players when you say NBA. It's not, you're not taking all baseball players in every stage of the way. It's just unbelievable that, you know, that they would kind of just throw that in there. And, you know, it was news because of, you know, what happened with, you know, War Machine, or like, what was that, mid last year or early last year?
About last year. Yeah.
It's something that, I mean, is it weird or is it just weird timing of that story? Don't you feel it should have came out maybe at the beginning of this year or maybe toward the end of last year?
Yeah, Real Sports is weird with their timeline. I mean, I was waiting for a story from Real Sports about specifically the UFC and it never came out. And that was talked about on Twitter for a long time. So especially stories on Real Sports, they don't really have a set season. They'll like go on break randomly and then they'll come back. So, I mean, it's not like 2020 where they're pumping out stories every single week. I mean, with Real Sports, they kind of pick and choose when they want to come out whenever the stories are ready. So it's kind of hard to really kind of hold them accountable for when the story is supposed to come out just because they're scheduled sporadic.
Right.
I want to talk about Stitch real quick. Jacob Stitch Duran, you might know him as the cut man for the UFC. And not only that, for pretty much all combat sports, kickboxing, boxing, he's the official cut man for the Klitschko brothers. Got fired for speaking out against the Reebok deal. Basically, not really even bashing the UFC, but just was honest in saying that he would receive a large pay cut because he'd be lacking his sponsors on the back of his vest for further UFC events. And from there, we've heard that the UFC has fired him, and this has caused outrage within a lot of UFC fans. Pretty much every notable UFC fighter pretty much went on Twitter. You can go on MMAJunkie.com and check that out. Pretty much were upset that Jacob Stitch Duran was fired, and we've seen this movement pretty much saying to boycott Reebok and to boycott the UFC. Even today, I saw people boycotting UFC Fight Pass, canceling their subscription because it is Jacob Stitch Duran's story. Now, do you think this is kind of a way for UFC fans just to fight back and just to kind of, do you think UFC fans are truly frustrated with what's been going on here? Because there's been a lot of negative criticism within the UFC Reebok deal. You know, I've been a huge critic of this. But is it enough? I mean, are fans overreacting by canceling their subscription? Or do you think this is a way for fans to fight back and express their displeasure?
It's a way for fans to, you know, like you said, they're showing their displeasure, their distaste of all this and how the UFC, and this is what I assume, that, you know, of them showing they don't like the way they're treating the athletes to the sport that they love or the people associated with it. Now, I guess to kind of play devil's advocate with the Jacob Duran situation, I mean, I love the freaking guy. He's been incredible the times I've met him, but
sure.
I was kind of curious to know if the UFC made anything off the sponsorships on Jacob Duran. I mean, if they took a percentage or anything like that, because if
I'm sure they did, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just strange that, you know, that wasn't something I thought about. Like, what's going to happen to the cutmen or the other people there behind the scenes that would typically be sponsored like that? I was going to say, I hate to say this, but I mean, it's not like Jacob Duran doesn't have a job anymore. I mean, he's the Klitschko's personal cut man. I'm sure he gets paid buku dollars for that. So he's able to make a career in other MMA sports, in other MMA promotions, as he has. He hasn't just been exclusive to the UFC. He's been floating around between boxing and MMA. So, I mean, he still has it, but I think it's amazing the type of support a figure and a character from the UFC who isn't a fighter or a promoter or a manager, I should say, get this much love. It's unbelievable, and it just shows how hardcore this MMA fan base truly is, man.
I agree. And just to make a note, you know, Dana White did a Q&A, and it's, you know, I think he can't get away with calling his fans morons anymore. I think he needs to grow up.
Was it this afternoon and yesterday to where, you know, he was just attacking fans? That was kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dana White, he, in all honesty, he's a macho jock. I mean, he's just one of these guys that, you know, if there's a fight and somebody pushes him in a restaurant, honestly, before his handlers get in, he's probably going to swing back. He's not going to be like, I'm going to call the cops, you know, somebody come over here. He's probably going to fight back. Because that's Dana White. And I think when you push him, he's going to push back. And I just think he needs to show some maturity as the sport's getting older. You know, that stuff he's not going to be able to get away with because the UFC is getting more popular. So he's going to have to deal with that a lot more.
It was just a little weird. I'm not sure if you saw the tweet earlier. This guy on Twitter, @MattWEJ, tweeted at Reebok and said, "Reebok, great publicity right here." And then he tagged Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White, making the news now. And it's USA Today's For the Win FTW page, where they kind of repost every critical tweet and, you know, every disrespectful tweet that, one, the fans sent to Dana White, and two, his responses. Dana White saw the tweet and he says, "You know, it's a bad news day when USA Today does a story about my Twitter. About time they covered us without being paid."
Weird.
That was very strange. So I don't know. There's something to this. I'm not sure if Dana White's going through some emotional thing or if he's just on some effort string right now and just, you know, upset with the Reebok deal. So I think a few things might even be going on, Jay. Maybe emotionally something's up with him, or maybe Reebok's on the verge of pulling out and he knows it. I mean, this is just me jumping to great leaps of assumption here, but
I don't think so, man, because look at the deal. I mean, this is not just some Coronet sponsorship or Bud Light. I mean, if Bud Light pulls out, that's a huge blow, but, you know, you just take the canvas out of the octagon and you move on. But with this Reebok deal, you have no sponsors. You have all the fighters in uniforms. This is 100% commitment. So if Reebok pulls out, you're screwed. I mean, there's a card this weekend. So, I mean, that's a big commitment. They can't just pull out. I mean, if they were to do that, that's a huge court case. I just think, to me, this is Dana White, always Dana White. You remember the Loretta Hunt situation? Loretta Hunt writes a story, and he goes on and has a huge rant calling her, you know, derogatory names.
Right.
He's called reporters derogatory names. This is not new.
Right.
I don't think he's going through any personal problems at all. This is just Dana White, you know. He's like Vince McMahon. When he feels attacked, he's going to attack back because that's his mentality. And until a reporter from ESPN or from, you know, NBC or somebody gets on his case and he does the same thing, that's when he'll learn his lesson. Because when he'll get national media attention, he'll learn the hard way. Because now, you know, you don't see the Dana White media scrums. You don't see a lot of the big-time interviews with Dana White anymore. It's because he knows his big mouth's got him in trouble. Real quickly, moving on. We're almost out of time, pretty much out of time. Now, your thoughts this weekend, Dillashaw, Barao, Tate, Gomi's in action. Any kind of predictions for the card this week?
Oh, man. I'm going Jessica Eye, and I'm going Dillashaw. Dillashaw by, I don't know, I just don't see Barao really, I mean, keeping up as much, you know, as he destroyed the last fight. I think Dillashaw kind of runs away with this one. Not as bad as it was last time. I think I expect it to be a much closer fight. And Jessica Eye, I mean, that's a good fight. I think Jessica's actually an underdog in that one. So I expect that to actually be a decent fight and for both women to implement what they're good at. But I think we might see a technically aggressive fight from both ladies. And, I mean, Miesha Tate isn't the most – maybe I take that back. Miesha Tate isn't the most technical person in the world as far as her fight style. I think she's on and off a lot of her fights. So hopefully we get a good one in that bantamweight division in that fight. And I think it'll be our view to see who Holly Holm fights next. I honestly think she'll fight the loser of this fight.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think personally I like Tate in this fight barely, but I'm rooting for Jessica Eye just to get some new blood as a number one contender for Ronda Rousey. And Jessica Eye talks trash. She's not going to back down, so that'll be entertaining. And for the main event, I agree with you. Dillashaw's too much. Barao has had weight problems before. And I think that's still going to come back to haunt him. Quickly, before we go here, Titan FC took place over a UFC Fight Pass. Isaac Valley Flag fought in this card. Unfortunately, threw an illegal knee that was clearly on the ground, but it was not intentional against Jason Wynn. A pretty decent back-and-forth fight happened at round three. Quickly, your thoughts on the knee, your thoughts on the situation. Obviously unfortunate, and it seemed like Titan FC president, he basically stated there will be a rematch right after. This is an unfortunate situation.
And that was the correct, decision.
Agreed.
Valley Flag was getting, I mean, he was getting dominated early on in that fight, and then he finally started getting in a groove. And it was just in a very emotional part of the fight, and it wasn't 100% obvious, and he was pretty quick when his opponent did touch the canvas there. So for that knee to be dropped, it was so close. And we all know Isaac Valley Flag; he's one of the most well-mannered people just in life. And you know, we've never seen anything even close to that in any of his other fights, especially the UFC. Always a professional 100%. So one of two things. I don't think it was on purpose, and I Agreed. Think the emotions and just the time of the fight may have gotten to him as well. I mean, I don't know. I can't say for certain if he knew his opponent was, you know, touching the canvas, but he's just never shown a history of, you know, being this type of dirty fighter.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even think it was like a dirty move. It was just an accident.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he's just the guy's getting up, and he need him. I don't. I mean, on Twitter, I think everybody felt sorry for him and felt sorry for the situation. I don't think there's any ill will. I think if there is any ill will, this is stupid fans that just don't know the sport. But I just think overall, you know, it was an accident. He apologized, and you know, life moves on. You know, he lost the fight, and he gets a rematch. So I think it's overall, it's all good. I don't think there's any ill will against Jason Witt at all towards Isaac Valley Flag. So, you know, life moves on from there. So, man, I fast forward to all those topics. So we're going to have to call it wraps for this episode. Again, you can always get in touch with the show through social media, through Twitter, through Facebook. We're also available on Spreaker and iTunes, and also, of course, available on YouTube as well. Yeah, videos from your trip to El Paso, Jorge, post-fight press conferences, interviews, so please go check that out. That is our YouTube channel. Just type in the Low Blow channel on the search page, and you'll be able to find that. So for Jorge Hernandez, I am Justin Goodrum. You've listened to episode 234 of the Low Blow on MyMMAnews.com and SouthwestFight.com. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll see you next week.
Peace.